I want to see science serve a useful purpose to improve the standard of living for all people.
Why is anyone fighting food advance? A very small percentage of the world's population is fortunate enough to have the luxury of turning down food.
We've arranged a society based on science and technology in which nobody understands anything about science and technology.
You can't build a peaceful world on empty stomachs and human misery.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Biotech Podcast. It's the weekly biotechnology podcast that's not just about biotechnology. Providing information to help you change hearts and minds. Moving innovations to application with communication.
Welcome to the Talking Biotech Podcast, the weekly podcast where we discuss contemporary issues in science and technology with a focus on biotechnology and new innovations that can help people and the planet. I'm Paul Vincelli, sitting in for Dr. Kevin Falta. Kevin, again, thank you for all these opportunities to do Talking Biotech Podcast. And today we're going to be talking about transgene flow in maize in Mexico. Maize or corn, of course. Now, Mexico is, of course, the center of origin of corn, Mexico and northern Central America. And in Mexico, consequently, there are a mixture of different types of corn or corn progenitors. They're the modern hybrids like we grow in the United States, but there are also land races or heritage varieties that have been grown for maybe hundreds of years. And also there is teosinte, which is a grass plant which is known to be the progenitor of corn selected from teosinte about 8,000 years ago or so. Now, the concept of transgene flow is the topic we're going to talk about today. And of course, transgenes are genes that come from outside the breeding pool of a crop, and so therefore are inserted through genetic engineering technologies. And before we talk about transgene flow in maize, I do want to stress that transgenes sometimes are misunderstood. They're just genes. They're not self-propagating like, say, for example, natural transposons or jumping genes are. They're simply genes that we move from one organism into another. And once they're there, they act like any other typical Mendelian gene. They just are inherited just like any other gene. So transgenes are not jumping genes. They're not transposons. They're simply genes that have been inserted into a particular crop. Now, today we have as our guest, Dr. Sol Ortiz Garcia, who is the Technical Director for Information and Research Support of the Intersecretarial Commission for Biosafety and Genetically Modified Organisms in the country of Mexico. So we have somebody who is very knowledgeable about this topic in a place where the country is the center of origin for an important crop. So, Sol, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for your invitation.
It's a pleasure. So I should have said in the beginning is that, Sol, you have a degree from the National Autonomous University of Mexico, a doctorate in ecology from the UNAM, same institution, and also have done a postdoc in Kew Gardens in the United Kingdom. And also you were, I think, a professor in the Faculty of Sciences at UNAM as well. Tell us a little bit about your academic background and most especially your experience in public service in this area. You've been working in this for a long time.
Yes, that's right. Well, I still teach at UNAM. Still a professor, just one class, actually is on biosafety, because I think it's very important that students at the Faculty of Sciences are familiar with these issues. So I still teach a bit there. But I work right now at the National Council of Science and Technology as you mentioned, at this Intersecretarial Commission on Biosafety, in short, we call it CBOGEM. I'm the executive secretariat of this commission. And I started working in the government when I first came back from my postdoc back in 2001 at the Ministry of Environment, the Secretary of Environment, we call it in short SEMARNAT, and at the National Institute of Ecology. And there was when I was first involved in issues on genetically modified organisms and biosafety. I had the opportunity to collaborate there doing risk assessment for environmental release of GMOs before the biosafety law was in place in Mexico and after the biosafety law was in place in Mexico. So we also had the opportunity to collaborate with the academics and people involved doing this biosafety law. And I have been also coordinating when I was at the National Institute of Ecology, a monitoring program for accidental releases of GE crops in Mexico, particularly in Oaxaca. So now my main job is coordinate these six secretaries of state. We have this intersecretarial commission where we have the Ministry of Health, Ministry of Environment, the Ministry of Agriculture, Education, Treasury and Economy, as well as the National Council on Science and Technology, working together to establish public policies on the safe use of GMOs in Mexico. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, what I think is most important about your background, as I look at it, is you come trained and with credentials as an ecologist, and not an agronomist, and not to disparage agronomists because they help feed us, but your perspective is sort of that maybe a bit of an outsider look to farming systems, and I think it's a really appropriate background for the kind of work you're doing.
Yes, that's right. I came to this with a different perspective, and I think that I have learned a lot from agronomists as well. Sure. And I have been able to, you know, share the views of ecologists. And I think that that is a important thing about GMOs and other technologies, that where you involve different specialities, they say, or different perspectives, that you can communicate with each other.
Yeah, that's huge. I agree. That's very important to be able to talk across disciplinary lines. So you've had this just marvelous background, much of it as a regulatory official. Is it correct to refer to you as a regulator for the country of Mexico?
Sure, that's correct. And I think I also had this technical perspective, but mostly today I'm most related with policies. But yeah. Yes, I have this background.
Sure. So let me review the facts as I understand them with respect to GM crops in Mexico. There are two that are approved for production in Mexico: soy and cotton. But not corn, and that is, I presume, to protect. Maybe it's been based on protection of the land races that are common in Mexico, and teosinte from transgene flow. Is that? Am I close? Is it correct?
You are quite close, except that we have also allowed the environmental release, the cultivation of other crops. Right now, as you say, it's just corn and also some alfalfa. In previous year, we have allowed the planting of lime, lemons, tomato was the first one back in 1998.
Oh okay, the Flavor Saver tomato?
Actually, the first one was a insect-resistant tomato with BT. Oh, yeah. The second one was Flavor Saver.
Wow.
But yeah, that was a long time ago. But right now, for environmental release, it's just cotton. We have judicial prevention for planting right now soybean until we do indigenous consultations. But we have been planting soybean since 1996 until 2015, was it 16?
Okay. So the production of soy was was during the period of 1996 to 2015.
2016, to be more precise, sorry. Okay. Yes.
Cotton is currently grown and has been for a number of years. Is that GE cotton? Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Also from 1996 was the same, the first certificates for allowing the planting of GM cotton. And okay. Until now, these are one of the... one of the crops that have reached the stage of environmental release at commercial stage. Okay. So this is something that I want to mention as well, that we have in Mexico three different stages for environmental release, what we call experimental, pilot stage, which is like pre-commercial stage, and commercial stage. So the only crop that has reached commercial stage right now is cotton. Previously was soybean, but this has to stop.
Okay. Okay. So cotton is allowed. It is allowed for commercial release. Soy was allowed for commercial release in that front time frame that we've described. You've described, and then
From 2012 to now.
Okay.
Because previously to 2012, it was allowed as pre-commercial, and before it was experimental, and before the biosafety law, there was what we call certificates for release. And so that's how the legislation has also been changed.
Okay. The commercial release for soy was 2012 to 2015. Is that right?
Yes, that's okay. Right.
And then let me back up. I'm sorry, but I this is so fascinating. Alfalfa, lemon, lime, and BT tomato all have history of some sort of release, but not necessarily commercial, correct?
That's right. And also wheat, because
wheat.
We have wheat.
Wow.
Yes, experimental release of wheat by the CIMMYT.
So these five crops have been allowed for experimental release. That is alfalfa, lemon, lime, tomato, and wheat.
Yes, and others that actually this is going to, I will take the opportunity to mention that you can consult all this information in a webpage of CBOGEM, and you can see that all the crops that were allowed in previous years since 1990s until 2018.
Okay, all right. Well, what I'm doing is making a note on the crops that have been deployed in some capacity, and I will send you an email, get that website, and we'll put that on the on the website. So yeah, wow. So I didn't realize there was so much experimental release of other crops in Mexico. So that there you go. Right away, I've learned something. So as is normal for talking about.
All right.
Good. So go ahead. Were you about to say something?
I was going to go back to maize because this is, the central crop for Mexico.
Yeah.
And before we had a moratorium or a ban for planting GM maize from 1998 to 2008. And before that, there were some releases, field trials, as you call it. And after that, during 2009 and 2013, there were many applications for the release of GM maize, and 195 permits were allowed. Of those, 169 were for experimental release, 26 were for the pilot stage that we call the pre-commercial stage, but none were for commercial stage. And in 2013, there was a legal action that is related to the diffuse right of having land races, and that make the judge stop the issuing of permits for GM maize since 2013 until now.
So 1998 to 2008, the corn was grown, was that as a commercial crop or as a pilot?
No, 1998 until 2008,
right.
There was a ban for corn, for planting.
Oh, there was no that
planting,
period of time.
No,
no
that
planting.
Was a moratorium, 10-year moratorium
okay,
for planting GM corn.
Okay, 10 years.
Nobody planted legally GM maize.
Okay.
And then in 2008, the moratorium was lifting. And then in 2009, SAGARPA, which is the Ministry of Agriculture, with SENASICA, which is the organist within SAGARPA that issues permits, allowed for the release of GM maize, the planting of GM maize in experimental and pilot stages.
Okay. And that was when did they then Seneca do that?
Senasica did that from 2009 to 2013.
Okay.
And let me just clarify that not Senasica alone, because what we have in our biosafety law is for Senasica to give a permit. This is the agricultural sector. For the agricultural sector to issue a permit for the environmental release of any GM crop, it needs a binding opinion from the Ministry of Environment. So these permits have a favorable opinion for the release of this GM corn back on 2009 until 2013.
Okay, and then in 2013 there was a court order of some sort?
It's not yet a court order. Mm-hmm. It's different from the one in soybean. Okay. It's from a judge. It hasn't reached the courts yet.
Oh, okay. And at that in 2013, that action by a judge, what was the consequence of that?
It prevented the planting of GM maize until the suit go along. Uh-huh. Is that the correct
the suit,
word?
Yeah, the lawsuit is resolved.
The lawsuit go along. So yeah. What the ones who promoted this action asked the judge was to stop the planting as a precautionary action
until
the decision is reached.
And that decision has not been reached yet?
No, yet.
Not yet. Okay, good. So yeah, tell us about TransGene Flow. And by the way, for the listeners, I know you have a significant publication history in this area. So it's something, certainly we're talking to somebody that knows a lot about the topic in Mexico. So tell us what you know.
Well,
which may take a few weeks, but
I will try to be brief and clear. Sure. Obviously, this is a long story, as you said. It started almost 18 years ago, so I will try to reduce well in the time that I was involved. So what we knew back in 2001 was that there was a paper by David Quist that said that there were some GM maize found in Oaxaca, and this is
that,
on
the paper
time.
Was again in 2001. Did you say?
I think it was 2001.
Okay, good.
It's okay. Maybe 2000. No, I think it was 2001. Well, back in those years, there was this moratorium that I was telling you about. Mm-hmm. So at the National Institute of Ecology, we started a program to monitor or doing inspections in these fields. And so we did, and we reported two of the years that we monitor in our paper in 2005. And at that time, we didn't find GM corn in land races.
Mm-hmm. If that's GM traits, right?
Thank you, GM traits in land races. Mm-hmm. And I know that some other groups have been taking this effort as well. And in other years, some groups have reported the presence of transgenes in land races in Oaxaca, and other haven't. And this is an issue that has been going on along the years about if there are transgenes, which are the transgenes that are there, and are they increasing their frequencies or they are not increasing frequencies. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and there was a recent paper published last year where they reported some likely positive results of 6 samples, I think from 50, a little bit more than 50 samples that they took, comparing 2 communities, indigenous communities and markets. And they also show a little bit hard or troubles reporting their results. That's why I think they put likely positive, because they used 3 different labs and the results among labs were not consistent. And they comment these problems that we have been encountering while we do monitor this. It's like looking for a Needle in a hay? Is that the way to say
needle
it?
Needle in a haystack. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So it is very hard to find them. And since they are in very, if they are there, they are in very low frequencies. Yeah. Even during the detection phase is hard to establish their presence. But there has been reports where they have said that they have found GMs, and some of those reports are published. The reports that are not published are some of the work that the government has been doing for the past 6 years. And this is also Senasica, who does the inspections. First, they were focusing a lot on inspecting hybrid fields close by to the places where they were giving the permits for environmental release of transgene.
Okay, so they're monitoring the release in the
exactly. And then they keep doing this until last year. And what they have found with these researchers that they are working with is not published yet, but they have doing more than 3,500 field samples.
Wow.
And they have found in very few of those presence of transgenes. And what they do is that they return next year to see if how is it doing. Obviously, they inform the farmer. And this is unintended planting. It's not like an illegal plantation of just GM, which has also occurred, but this is not the case for these other ones. And what they found is that they go back and usually they don't find it again. And if it comes again next year, then the next year is not there. They also find it every time in very, very low frequencies.
Right, right. So as I understand it, there's no, if anything, the occurrences are typically on the limit of detection. In fact, that was my impression of that 2017 paper that you mentioned. Is, you know, that if these detections are valid positives, they're at the limit of detection, and so even in those conditions, sometimes you can get
false negatives.
Yeah, false positives.
Yes.
Right.
Well, if it's in the limit and they are there, and you don't detect it, it will be false.
That'd be a false negative.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe I'm getting deeper into this than we should, but what my point was simply that sometimes when it's near the limit of detection, there might be a positive that actually is not, you know, if they sequenced it, which they didn't do, if they sequenced that reaction, they might find it actually wasn't a positive reaction.
Yes,
but there were some things that were missing out of that study, and I've interrupted you, so I'll turn it back.
No, you're right. I was when I wrote it, I was thinking probably the same as you do, because they were going to very high number of
cycles.
Cycles, yes,
of
that's
PCR
right.
PCR cycles, yeah.
Yeah, and as far as I remember, when we were mounting this detection lab, going over 35 cycles, you get a specific amplification.
Exactly.
You
know? So exactly.
That might be a problem as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I think the failure to sequence the reactions that they got, that would have been an easy way to verify, you know, that
yes,
it was a real positive. But listen, you've got some good, wonderful information, and we're going to carry on for quite a bit, but I think maybe now is a good time to take a short break. So we're talking to Dr. Sol Ortiz Garcia from the Intersecretarial Commission on Biosafety of Genetically Modified Organisms in Mexico, someone with a great deal of perspective and knowledge on this subject, and we'll continue this conversation about transgenes when we come back. Thank you for listening to the Talking Biotech Podcast.
Hi everybody, this is Kevin Fulta. 3 years ago, I started an experiment, the Talking Biotech Podcast. Now, I had experimented with podcasting and wanted to create content, but I didn't really need a spotlight. I didn't want people to listen and tell me that, okay, you have time for that stupid podcast, but you don't have time to review that grant proposal or serve on the committee or shave the dog. So I did my first podcast, the
Vern Blathek Fine Power Hour with Vern Blathek, and
you know, we all know that didn't turn out so hot. But this week, 3 years ago, I was on the Joe Rogan Experience. It's hard to believe it was that long ago. I mean, Joe was super cool, and the podcast was well received. And at the end, Joe told me that I needed to start a podcast. So I ditched that modulated Vern Blathek voice and started my own series, June 12, 2015. Now, since that time, I've been joined by the outstanding Paul Vincelli and a host of other, well, co-hosts. They're all awesome. But the real star of the show is the science and the scientists and the journalists and the ag professionals that share their stories. After 3 years and 130-some episodes, I'm really grateful for all the support and kindness, the 20,000 monthly downloads, and the great buzz we get in social media. It seriously is the high point of my week, and I do the interviews and produce the episodes and see it go live, and there's nothing better on Saturday morning than to wake up and see that on the phone, that hear it, it happened, and it's magic, and we're talking about science. We're creating a durable and useful resource. We're sharing science. We're changing hearts and minds. And someday, we're going to look back and see how far we've come. I think we see that already. Thank you for 3 great years, and thank you for your wonderful support.
And we're back on the Talking Biotech podcast with Dr. Sol Ortiz-Garcia, the Technical Director for Information and Research Support of the Intersecretarial Commission for Biosafety of Genetically Modified Organisms in Mexico. And Sol, once again, thanks for your time and bringing your expertise to the Talking Biotech podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
So Sol, we're into a very complex topic, of course. And so I think the question that really is front and center for me is, so if you look at the research that's been done and the work that's been done by government, you know, Mexico and Mexican scientists like you, has there been transgene flow in maize in Mexico?
I think that that's a tough question to answer, as you pointed, because you say transgene flow. And I think it might have been very few transgene flow. What we think we are seeing at some point is seed planting from, from GM maize that is important to Mexico, because I haven't gone into that detail, but we do not allow the planting of GM maize, but we do allow the importation of GM maize into our country. And this is because we have a different system for approving GM crops in Mexico. For example, for food, feed, and processing, we have authorizations from the Ministry of Health. And the Ministry of Health, since 2006 until today, have approved a total of 164 events of GM crops. Not all are commercialized today, but from those 164, 80 events are from maize, different GM maize events that are allowed for food, feed, and processing in Mexico. So we import every year around 12 million tons. This year was a little bit more than 12 million tons of GM maize for food, feed, and processing. So in that respect, we can see that at some point some of those grains could reach the environment. And we have set different programs to avoid that situation and direct the imported maize to processing, mostly for feed. But there's the possibility that some seeds could reach the environment, because at some point, if farmers buy grain for eating and they decide to plant it, there could be some planting of GM corn. But that would allow a little bit of gene flow. But what I think it hasn't happened is introgression, which is the next step. Because introgression is when you have populations with transgenes fixing their populations. And that is something that we are not seeing this far after 20 years of having GM maize around.
Okay, that's a very good statement. So first to back up, you say 160 genetic events have been approved, genetically engineered events, and 80 of those are from maize. And those approvals are required, even if they're not grown and cultivated in Mexico, but they're required for the importation. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. For importing and commercializing GM maize in Mexico, we need to have approvals by the COFEPRIS, which is the National Commission Against Sanitary Risks. Mm-hmm. And it's the branch, technical branch of the Ministry of Health, and they do the safety assessment for these GM crops, and they do it according to the Codex Alimentarius and other international standards for assessing risk for food, feed, and processing of GM crops.
Okay, so a lot of that corn is U.S. corn, actually.
It's pretty much all of it, most of it, let's say.
Most of it is. Mm-hmm. So, but you made the distinction as you wrapped up with those comments. You made an important distinction, and you said that you distinguished gene flow, which would occur, you know, at least in maize, largely through pollen movement, versus introgression, which is where the genetic trait, any genetic trait, engineered or not, is it becomes part of the fixed into the population and part of the population genetics. Is that a fair summary?
Yes, that's perfectly a very good summary. Thank you for doing it.
So you have. I think you very clearly said there's been no evidence of introgression into land races in or teosinte in corn. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, that's
not to our knowledge. I mean, we have been and the Senasica have been doing all this research, and the research that have been published, as we were discussing briefly ago, show that there might be presence in very low frequencies. So that doesn't mean that the transgene are increasing their frequency or are introgressing and getting fixed in the genome of maize. And let me go a little bit further with this, because I think there are a lot of reasons why this is not happening.
The introgression.
Yes, okay. Why transgenes tend to appear. We said some of the sources of this appearance and why they tend to go
diminish
their frequency or disappear. Yeah. And this one of the main reasons, and we have seen it, is that the land races that we have in Mexico are growing in a very tight relation with small farmers that mm-hmm. cultivate these land races. Yeah. And they play a very important role in selecting what they want from those land races. So whenever they, for any reason, they have phenotypic characteristic, a phenotypic trait, and not just from GMs, but from hybrid corn, that mm-hmm. every time they have these different characteristics that they don't like to see in their land races, they don't plant them. They save the land race that they want to have, they, mm-hmm. with the characteristics that they like. So this, let's say, artificial selection, because it's done by farmers, is a very strong way to get rid of whatever characteristic you are not liking, or even if there's something that you might benefit but is not in relation with what you expect from your land races, you can select against it. And this is something that makes sense with what you just said at the beginning. The transgenes don't fly by themselves. They move along with at least 50% of their genetic material, you know? Mm-hmm. So this genetic material might not be adapted for the places where land ranges are grown, which are usually in with limited nutrients or in slopes and conditions that are not easy for growing hybrid maize. So some of these characteristics are going to be selected against because just environmental conditions, and others are going to be selected against because the farmers will prefer corn, red corn or blue corn, that is not what they get when they receive the transgene with the characteristics of the yellow corn where they usually comes from.
Yeah. So with every land, with land races in Mexico of corn, every generation allows them an opportunity to select the traits that they want, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's right. And that's how they do it. They select in what they prefer. It usually is with the mazorca, the ear with the grain, and they are looking for particular characteristics in color, flavor, and properties to, for example, make tortillas, which are different from the ones that may come not just from some transgenes, but from hybrid maize, for example. And I think that the same situation would be happening if some transgenes reach some of the teosintles, not all the teosintles interbreed with maize, but the transgenes that could reach some teosintles will come with other characteristics of maize, and many of the domesticated characteristics of maize are against the fitness, let's say that way, of teosintle, because that's how it has prevented from having an intermediate maize or intermediate teosintle between maize. They just don't go along. They tend to be selected against by many reasons.
So the even hybrid seed wouldn't necessarily represent a serious risk to teosinte genetics because the traits that it confers, that the hybrid corn confers, may not be at all helpful to the survival and development of teosinte.
That's right.
Okay. Interesting. Certainly, I mean, I'm interjecting an opinion here, but I can understand why a company would want to sell engineered maize in Mexico. I can also understand why the country of Mexico may say no. we don't want to take any chances on our land races. Imagine a trait that is an anti-insect. So BT is an example. If that were to appear, through hybridization and pollen flow to appear in a land race, it might be something a grower would select without even intending to, because they just like the appearance of the grain. So, it's a complicated question, isn't it?
Well, yes, that will depend on also in which is the strongest selective pressure in different places. Sure. And in some places it's not necessarily pest, or are not necessarily the pests that are related with the modification. In some places that it might be the case. But also other characteristics, for example, drought tolerance at some other point of time could be a characteristic that will be selected in favor, maybe more than a VT. Certainly, for example, the herbicide tolerant in land races where they usually don't use herbicides, and they have, for example, milpas, that will not be a characteristic that will easily be selected and stay in the population.
Right.
So it's very casuistic, I have to say. And this other comment that you mentioned the country being able to say yes or no. Mm-hmm. And this is a very big issue, because I see it from an ecology perspective. We are a very diverse country, and not just mega diverse in terms of biological diversity, which we actually are, but also very diverse in terms of different ways to cultivate plants. We have very many different production systems. We have high input production systems, and we have what we call agricultura de traspatio, which is people growing crops in their backyards. Mm-hmm. So, and everything in between. So there are groups that say no, and there are groups that say yes. And I think that the legislators at some point try to balance these different ways of saying, let's say, from different sectors and different people. And we obviously are very sensitive in the case of maize, but we are a big country. So there are places where it might be useful for farmers to try, and if they think that improve their cultivation, not just in terms of using less herbicides or less insecticides in a way and saving money, but also because they will pollute a little bit less the environment, I think that the biosafety law would allow for that in some places, but not in others, mm-hmm. you know, considering the responsibility we have being a center of origin. So this is another issue that has been taken into account with decision makers, where in the biosafety law, there are regions where you are not allowed to even present an application for planting GM maize, because you have the land races there. Yeah. As you say, that doesn't mean that if the land race will get that transgene, will jeopardize its existence, but that means that until we know more and we know better, we don't want land races with transgenes. But there are other parts of Mexico where farmers are willing to try, and that's why the companies decide also to present applications. So, so after a risk assessment, you can allow for some planting in some places that will help some people in make a decision in a big diverse country.
Yeah. So I think you're making the point that such decisions have to be made on a case by case basis.
That's right.
Yeah.
We have that in our perspectives. It's not the same Oaxaca than Sinaloa, for example, or Tamaulipas. Mm-hmm.
So to me, maybe the point, this most salient point of this, what I've learned is that gene flow may have occurred on some level at very low levels occasionally in maize, but we don't see evidence of introgression. And so the trait that may have been detected, you know, in year X, the next year is very hard to find. And so there's no evidence of introgression at this point, which is good news. I'm curious what you've got you've thought a lot about this issue. What lessons can we in agricultural production and just in general agricultural production, what lessons can we learn from the experience that Mexico has had with respect to corn and genetic engineering?
Well, I think that from my perspective is that in terms of this discussion about GM maize in Mexico, yes or no, I think we are missing like the big picture. We are missing a little bit, why are we in some places losing land races? And it's not directly to the use of hybrid maize or GM maize, but it's related to other things that need to be taken into account for the conservation of these land races. And these are urbanization, for example, or migration. Farmers are leaving the farms. Mm-hmm. And also we have other big problems with security, or farmers. Our farmers are getting old, and young kids, not all are wanting to keep farming land races, or sometimes they also want to change to other crops because of prices. So I think that sometimes with this discussion of GMOs, we are missing the big picture on how can we allow or motivate a bigger tool, a bigger box of tools, let's say it that way, for farmers to choose whatever it's better for their practices. Obviously, complying with all the biosafety measures that we have, and in that way, how can we finance or promote studies or research for new varieties, not focusing that much in the way we generated varieties, but how we make them safe, we made them available, we made them useful, and we made it in a way that contribute to a better environment and to a better choices and better ways to grow food, which is what we need.
You know, boy, this is why I love doing this Talking Biotech podcast, because what a great insight. So you've said we may be missing the big picture. Why are we losing land races? I mean, I had no idea that you were, you know, and so what a wonderful, sad question to have to ask, but an important one. And so for listeners, I'm going to introduce the phrase conservation in situ, which refers to not conservation just in or in you know, the cold rooms of laboratories of the world, but also conservation in out in the field by cultivating these landrace varieties. And so as the production of landraces declines, indeed we do risk losing germplasm that might be useful. So This is really important point you've brought up, and I was one that I was unaware of, and maybe most listeners were unaware of. So yeah. Any final thoughts for our listeners? So,
well, just to thank you for the opportunity to share these views. I think that we have to keep in mind that there's different perspectives for many different issues. And one that I think one way to deal with all of this is tolerance. So I think that we need more collaboration and more dialogue for deciding about where to use which technologies and with science-based decisions. I think that we can go ahead in knowing where is going to be beneficial and where is not worth it. So, yeah. And dialogue is, I think, an important thing. And that's why I think that what you do with these exercises is also very important. So thank you for inviting me to participate.
Yeah, what a wonderful way to wrap it up. So thank you very much. So, with respect, I'm just repeating back because it's these are such good points. With respect to technology, we need more tolerance, collaboration, dialogue. How wonderful. So, thank you so much for sharing your ideas and your knowledge and your perspective and wisdom, Sol. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So, and thank you, listeners, for listening to the Talking Biotech podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Talking Biotech. Write a review on iTunes and tell a friend to listen, as your support allows us to deliver more about exciting science to more people. I'm Paul Vincelli. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Biotech podcast. Send your suggestions for guests, comments, or questions to talkingbiotech@gmail.com. Please write a review of this podcast on iTunes and recommend it to a friend. More downloads help us reach a wider audience with science.